We are developing a mobile app for consumers that allows you to understand your personal carbon footprint, reduce it, and offset the emissions that you can't reduce. And therefore, we make it very easy for individuals to live what's called climate neutral. That means if the remaining emissions that are personally attributable to your lifestyle are offset by financing climate projects all over the world that take down or avoid the same emissions elsewhere, which is only possible through your contribution.
Welcome to this episode of the Mother of Zeros show. Today, I'm very excited to bring you a guest who is a special entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur, who decided to do something useful in the field of sustainability. I'm talking about Marcus Giltz. He is the founder of various app startups, which is almost where you could call him an appreneur. And this is what I'm very excited about, because he's someone who has really figured out the mobile game. He has co-founded Hyper, which was a social platform, a video magazine, which has been acquired 1 year after he established it. And then besides that, he also co-founded Mighty, a self-defense app. And now he is the co-founder of Klima. Klima is a company that, and he's going to talk us through about his vision and about the idea, the big idea behind it, and why he decided to launch or work on a mobile app. But Klima is something that helps us to take effective immediate climate action with the help of our mobile phone, so to speak. So, Marcus, thank you so much for taking the time, and thanks for being here.
Hi, Max. Thanks for the invitation. Happy to be here.
So, Marcus, there are a lot of ways that we can go into that, but I would like to start by putting the focus sort of on you, and then when we understood your own intention, why you went into the sustainability space, then we go deeper into what Klima really is, if that's okay for you. So maybe based on your current or based on your history in the tech space, what led you from starting two successful companies to now getting into the sustainability space?
Yeah, maybe it's helpful to go even one step further back, because I had a life even before the tech space, and that was even closer to what I'm doing right now in terms of the area that we entered in with Klima. So I've been a political activist since I was 16 in different realms. That was about a lot about education and democratization, many topics that I've been involved in all through my youth and also my university times. And specifically right after uni, I worked in the sustainability sector before. So I've done different things, but been working, for example, for the German Fair Trade Association. So in establishing fair trade practices across different goods that are sold worldwide. And this is also the time when I met my co-founders already. So that was about like 9 to 10 years ago. My co-founder, Jonas Brander, who was an aspiring young filmmaker at the time, and he was doing sustainability campaigns via video, was not the very early, but the still kind of early days on YouTube, when the idea of viral videos was something new. And together we collaborated on some things in that realm that were going viral in the early days of viral. And my other co-founder, Andreas, we knew from university also, is still now our CTO at Klima, had been working at the time for an international NGO, establishing IT infrastructure in post-conflict countries for the German government, and so contributing to sustainable development in that way. And so we met at the time, which was also a time when the App Store was new, and the iPhone has kind of just been around, and so there was kind of all this this new shiny world of technology, and we are also, you know, despite different things that we cared about, we also loved technology. And and so we saw the the many, many possibilities to do good with technology. And so this is how we kind of went into the startup scene in Berlin. It was, you know, just to give a bit of background, was the first co-working space in Berlin had just been established, the Bilderhaus, and it was completely a new thing. And so this whole kind of mobile startup cohort was just starting out. And this is when we got started. And so we have been working somehow. I think the apps that we did were always driven by a desire to do something that serves society, or that makes society better. So tech for good, maybe in a wider sense. But with Klima, I think we, for all of us, kind of closed the loop to go back to kind of sustainability and see how that can be linked with tech. And so that was, I think, very similar to many people about a year and a half ago. So between 2018-2019, when first of all the special report by the IPCC on 1.5 degrees came out, and was really, really an eye-opening report for many people, and also when the, you know, Fridays for Future movement really started to pick up steam and demand that public attention, and everybody that was willing at the time to start listening to something that had been, you know, in the back of everyone's mind for a while. Like a lot of people had this moment where they like came to face the facts finally, and so that was the same for us, and to realize how urgent this climate emergency is that we're in, and so when the three of us, so the three co-founders that had been working together for almost a decade by then, came together and decided what do we want to do next. Climate change was on top of all of our minds and of all our lists of things that we would get excited about. It was also a time, I would say, in our personal careers where even more than before, I think there's some things when you go into startup that are kind of cool to achieve, you know, your first exit, or, you know, going, you know, been working from New York for 2 years, you know, from the World Trade Center, you know, 82nd floor, like all these cool things on your resume. So we had already done these things, you know, and so it was more about for us also personally, the next thing should be definitely about kind of what do we leave behind, and kind of how do we do, can we do something that's really focused on purpose. And our initial idea then was, okay, if we want to do something about climate change, let's start an NGO. That seems to be obvious. So it was not about money really. But we realized then quickly that if we want to do something with the scale ambition that we were used to, we wanted to go a different route and do it in as a private enterprise, because it allowed us much more to combine kind of that scale mindset with the purpose. And so we think that is a very potent mix. And so this is how we then decided to do it as a startup.
Why do you think that this scale mindset is the right way to go forward? You said that you wanted, like, your first impulse was, let's start an NGO to do something good. Why now say actually the scalability is very important? What is it that you think is tactically or strategically more intelligent or more impactful if you do it like that? Why not start the NGO?
Yeah, it is. There's a couple of things that come together, and also again, this is kind of our answer to it. Our solution might not be the right one for everyone, but the first thing is kind of entrepreneurial freedom. We had a bit experience working. I mean, we have been, first of all, working in the NGO field before, and I know how frustratingly slow things can be, specifically with kind of raising capital, and then the lack of entrepreneurial freedom of what you can do with that, and which often just leads to a mentality of, at the end of the year, everybody's just happy that the money that you raised was spent according with the regulations, and you don't have money left in the bank, and you can go into a next round of you know, government grants. And so it's hardly a mentality where you can kind of pivot quickly, you know, or like try something new and be bold, or just say like, we need to be a bit crazy, because all the sane approaches have already been tried. And if we want to do something that's really out of the box, we need to think in a direction that might fail completely, but has the potential, if it succeeds, to be a game changer. So that mentality doesn't work with, you know, European Union grants and like all that kind of landscape, you know. So this is one thing that we realized quickly, and we also realized that we that was just also the way that we were kind of schooled or self-taught by the experience that we had to work, and that we had also probably better access to capital in order to build something quickly. And we realized that speed is the most important thing that we need to accomplish right now, because the pressure of the climate emergency is just so big, and we don't have the time anymore to grow something really, really slowly, to grow solutions really, really slowly and say like, yeah, maybe over 10 or 20 years, you know, it will achieve something. We don't have decades anymore. We have years to find the right solutions and really apply them in a way that then kind of can multiply. And if you are able to build something that has that does good and has also a robust business model attached to it, where you can, you know, reinvest surplus into further reach and further growth, which means further impact. If you can achieve that, which also we still need to do, we're still in the early stages, but then you can create something that's really, really powerful. And so we're not here to do kind of a lifestyle business where it's nice to tell at cocktail parties that we're working on the right side. You know, it's we're here to do something that really makes a dent and that can become really, really big.
At the moment, we have the Green Tech Festival running, right? Or it's it might also be already over. Depends on when you listen to this. But the Green Tech Festival is something where it's like a platform of where companies are presenting their sort of ideas and products and what is really happening in the world of like startup impact. Right? Do you know it? Do you have it on your radar?
I have it on the radar, yeah.
So do you think that this is the new kind of movement that has to become stronger and stronger in, I would not say versus the existing model of NGOs or also what the UN is doing, because they also have accelerators and so on and so on. But do you think the startup world, to put it bluntly, has to get its stuff together to also become part of the solution? Or do you think there has to be a new model? Like, what do you think is the part, which kind of part should the startup ecosystem play in the whole picture of finding solutions?
Yes, it's a very good question. And I think it's important that what you mentioned, that it's not a versus, it's not an either or. First of all, when we talk about climate solutions, we should just erase the model of either or completely from our, you know, conceptualizing it, because it's always yes and, it's always all of the above and what and thinking about what else we can do. It's just too late in this fight and to be picky. We need to do everything that works. So that's first of all. And I think, and also second of all, the NGO sector, everything, like we are also with what we are doing, and we can also in short time go into a little bit more what Klima actually is and what we actually do. We are also standing on the shoulders of giants, a lot of which come from the NGO sector, right? So there was a lot of important pioneer work being done and still being done, specifically when it comes to like kind of research and political advocacy. And we are just kind of finding one niche where we think we can contribute something with a specific background that we have that is missing. But to answer your question, I think yes, the green tech sector is gonna you know, can play a very, very crucial role. And from everything that I'm seeing right now, it's really kind of starting to pick up and starting to manifest in many different ways. So the festival that you mentioned is one way. There's the Green Tech Alliance, which has been forming, you know, out of Berlin, but already kind of reaching in very many people internationally. There's the Leaders for Climate Action, which I know you are familiar with, that are also right now having visibility across, you know, also kind of coming out of Berlin, Germany, and like already going global. And so there's a lot of these things right now that are picking up speed. And Berlin actually really seems can play a crucial role in this. So this is great to see, and it's great to be part of. I think in general, when we look at VC and startup just as two phenomena that work very well together to create big changes, to create big innovations. This has been a success model for so many things, some in their societal outcome for better, some for worse. Specifically, I'm talking about social media. It's still, the verdict is out if that was overall good or bad, but it's something that can create massive change. And now is the time for the actors involved in these scenes to put that capability that they have built up and in the fight against climate change. Is if there was ever something kind of worth working on, ever a problem that was worth solving, it's this. So everybody in these scenes should ask themselves, are you working on the most important problem right now? If not, why not? And if yes, you have the tools, you have the, you know, the infrastructure, the ecosystem, as we like to say. So let's put it to work.
And you are putting it to work with a consumer product, right? Klima, yes. At least that's the first step that is sort of visible when you look at what Klima actually is, looking at your landing page and having a look at what you're already presenting. Why do you think that a consumer-facing solution is important? And which role do you want the consumer to play, and what do you think is the leverage that the consumer will have? And while you explain that, maybe explain also to us what Klima as a product is, and if it's more than that, if it's an ideology, then let us take part in that as well.
It's a good question to explore. I've never thought about if what we're doing is an ideology. Maybe so. let's see. I'd love to explore it. Why are we focusing on the consumer? Obviously, I think, first of all, I don't think that the consumer is to blame. You know, I want to steer kind of away from that conception. But the consumer has power, and if we look at the big levers that we have as a global society to kind of to try to achieve the Paris goals.
Yes.
First thing that comes to mind is politics. Obviously, politics has the biggest lever in regulation, and they, you know, have already achieved a lot and impressive things with kind of the Paris Declaration. But there's also limits to what politics can achieve. And right now there is still a gap, right? So still, if all governments stick to their commitment under the Paris Accord, we're still not getting there. It's still not enough. And these commitments are voluntary. So we need to find other levers as well. So we have, private industry and that we have investing, or rather divesting, as big levers. Yes. But we also have just billions of individuals that want to do something. And the question is, can we lever that as a resource in the fight against climate change? And it's really kind of so in that sense, it's not an ideology, as it's not, we're not saying like, oh yeah, it's the everybody kind of, we need to, the only way we can solve climate change is one consumer choice at a time or anything like that. It's more like, of course, we need politics, etc., and we need also to, you know, to be involved as citizens and not only as consumers. But if we personally want to do something, then there should be a way that makes it easy. And we realized that there is a massive potential of people that want to do something, but they don't necessarily have a good outlet. And so this is just a potential that's left on the table that we currently can't afford not to employ. And that was the beginning of our thinking. And obviously, we're coming from a consumer focused kind of product perspective. We have a background of, and we also, I think, have a bit of a reputation in the startup scene to be kind of a very design-driven, very product-driven team that focuses on, you know, user experience and these kind of things. And I think that's a bit our kind of, you know, unfair advantage, so to say.
This is where you are world class, right? This is why it's so exciting that you are doing this. I mean, the seed was always there, but you are really going into this area and really leveraging what you learned over the years.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's. I talk to many entrepreneurs or maybe entrepreneurs who wanted to start or something like that, but they never managed to do it. So I'm very excited to also hear what the product is about and what you want the consumer to like. What do you want them to be able to do with the app?
Yeah, exactly. So so first of all, what does Klima even do? So I realize we're already quite into the podcast and haven't really given the kind of elevator pitch. So let me make sure we do that.
I can cut it into the front as well. That's no problem.
Okay, that's right. So so what does Klima do? We are developing a mobile app for consumers that allows you to understand your personal carbon footprint, reduce it, and offset the emissions that you can't reduce. And therefore, we make it very easy for individuals to live what's called climate neutral. That means if the remaining emissions that are personally attributable to your lifestyle are offset by financing climate projects all over the world that take down or avoid the same emissions elsewhere, which is only possible through your contribution. And this is a beautiful way for, and it's really kind of, it takes 2 minutes with the app to do so and to become carbon neutral. You can download it 2 minutes later. If you want to do it, you're carbon neutral. And something that that we found interesting when we started researching that it's that it doesn't even cost so much to put enough trees in the ground or these other measures that we do, which I can also elaborate more on, to draw down emissions from the atmosphere or to avoid emissions elsewhere. So the beauty of carbon offsetting is to start wherever it's the most effective in the world. And so for an average consumer, it's about the price of a Netflix subscription to take your own carbon footprint off the planet. So it's actually a really, really beautiful solution for people that want to do something, for people that say, well, I can afford, you know, one coffee a week easily and without thinking about it. I might just as well put the same money to work in order to do kind of what seems to be a no-brainer in terms of climate action, as it's just kind of removing my own garbage from the atmosphere, so to say, right? So this is really kind of an easy buy-in for users to say, I want to do something that is simple, that I can wrap my head around, and that is effective and measurable, because all of these projects are science-based and measured and verified by independent third parties. So there's a whole kind of ecosystem around that that makes sure that these things are legit. And the projects have these so-called co-benefits, in that not only do they take carbon out of the atmosphere or prevent carbon from going to the atmosphere, they also make sure that essentially, wealth is going from the industrialized countries into non-industrial countries in which a lot of these measures are employed. So this means we're creating wealth in these countries as well. We're creating jobs and financial security. We do know-how transfer to this country. So there's a lot of positive things that are also achieving goals under the Agenda 2030 from the United Nations, the Sustainable Development Goals. So overall, it's a system that has many different benefits. The core one of which, around we focus, is drawing down carbon, and has the beauty that it can scale, and so and it has the beauty that it's that everybody can participate. And until now, obviously, that system already existed, but it just didn't have a good interface. And this is we looked at what's out there, and you can find websites, etc., and offset your flight and whatnot. But we found there's nothing there that is really as simple as the best digital or the best app services that we have, right? You take out your phone, you tap a button, you hail a ride. why isn't climate action as easy? And the answer from our perspective was, there is no reason. You just somebody needs to build a great user experience for it. And we realized that if we can, in fact, with user experience design, take out friction from intention to action, the friction that's between these two things, then the outcome or the could potentially be massive, because we can reach potentially millions and millions of people. And that's what we're setting out to do.
It's a beautiful way of putting it, and a great mission. I have a couple of objections that might be a little bit mean, but I would love to get your point on that.
Please.
So when you talk about drawing down carbon and helping someone to go from having a high CO2 footprint or no awareness at all about their CO2 footprint to carbon neutral, how do you do that, and what are the concrete steps that you are taking? So, like, where is the money going, and why should it be able to draw down carbon?
Yeah, no, very good question. This gives me the opportunity to talk a bit more in detail about the climate projects that we support. There's many different ways, many different methods that we can apply to draw down carbon from the atmosphere and store it in the soil, for example, or to avoid, obviously, emissions. Mm-hmm. And we are currently focused on three different, what we call, impact areas under which all of our projects fall. It's either nature-based solutions, technology-based solutions, or social impact solutions. Mm-hmm. So nature-based solutions would be simply planting trees on degraded land. So that's land where there used to be lush forests, tropical forests, that have been that have degraded because of they were used as land for cattle, and now this is just cattle. Land that's lying barren, and now there's initiatives that go there and reforest that land, and obviously every this is I guess common knowledge, every tree sucks CO2 out of the atmosphere, stores the carbon in its trunk, and releases the oxygen, right? And so this is actually, we talk about, you know, new technologies that people are working on, that like a big ventilators that suck carbon out of the atmosphere, but they're very, very expensive. It's probably still important technology to keep developing, but nature has already built the best carbon sucking machines that we can imagine, right? And they're very, very easy and comparatively cheap to implement. You just need to put a seedling in the ground and make sure it can flourish, right? And this is a technology that we have been using and mastering across many, many generations already, and now we just need to do that again. So we're planting forests, for example, in Tanzania or in Panama, and the local communities benefit in a multitude of ways, right? You restore biodiversity. But you also allow them to harvest the trees, for example, right? So in Panama, for example, we have coca plants, so that they're interplanted with over 20 different kind of native tree species in a kind of agroforestry kind of arrangement, and so that they're standing right next to trees that provide shade, other trees that provide income for the farmers. And so we need to do it in a way that the trees are providing value to the community, or more value standing rather than being chopped down. So you need to make sure that this system doesn't work if what you're doing does not benefit the local community, because then the trees would in the long term not stand. So it's very important to think about that from a communal perspective. So this is one way which I think many people understand intuitively. Another way that I love to talk about, because it's such an amazing project as well, is, and this falls into the social impact category, is a project that we are supporting in Ghana called JAPA, and it's a clean cookstove project. So for that, you need to understand that at this point, 40% of the world's population still cooks their meals over open fireplaces. So that's just kind of open fire with three stones around it and a cook stove on top. And so this is incredibly inefficient, and it means that around 3 billion people can only have warm food, cooked food, if trees are being chopped down. Mm-hmm. As simple as that, right? Mm-hmm. So providing families that are still cooking that way with efficient and clean cookstoves, first of all, massively reduces the need for fuel that they need to burn. But also has tremendous health benefits. So worldwide,
yes,
4 million people die of the exhaust from these fires every year.
Because they cook in tents, right? And it's like the air is having all the smoke.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like akin to the smoke of 400 cigarettes an hour. Can you imagine that?
Crazy.
So this is women and children that are mainly exposed to that. Again, like 4 million people, 4 million premature death every year. So with these kind of clean cookstuff initiatives, you can save the planet and save lives at the same time, which makes it a really, really beautiful project. And also it steers a local economy because these stoves are locally produced, etc., and kind of very much in line with the cooking tradition of the communities, etc. So it's not really like some people imagine, like an external, like Westerner coming in and say, like, here's like a, you know, induction stove or something like that. It's really kind of based on the needs and on the traditions and the way that they prepare food.
And you have partners for that?
We are working together on all these fronts with partners that have been in the field for many years, 10-20 years, and they really know what they're doing, because this is also something where you need to have the experience on the ground, you need to have
the
cultural knowledge, you need to have the technological knowledge, and you need to really know what you're doing. And this is something where from the beginning it was very clear to us that we're not trying to do something where others are much better, and to rather to focus on where we are really good and contribute that to the ecosystem, so to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was the third part? You said nature, social,
and technology.
And technology.
So this is a classic case of preventing carbon emissions. We are currently of preventing carbon emissions through renewable technology. We're currently supporting two solar energy projects in Africa, one in Mauritania, one in South Africa. And just to give an example, Mauritania is one of the poorest countries in the world, classified as the least developed country. Mm. And 90% of the country's area is Sahara Desert. So they actually live in an absolute abundance of sunlight. And yet so far they have been lacking the know-how and technology and also financing to utilize that, because the country is still in a situation where it's just cheaper for them to go back to more coal plants, which is what they know, and put carbon emissions in the atmosphere when they think, or more carbon emissions in the atmosphere when they think about expanding the electricity supply. And it's a country where not everybody has access to electricity. Worldwide, there's still a billion people that don't have access to electricity. So we need to think, when we think about kind of renewable energy, we need to think about the developing countries and the non-industrial countries as well, because all of them, they aspire to obviously the kind of development that we have built on fossil fuel. So the entire industrial world has built their wealth on fossil fuel.
Totally.
And there's still many, many people in the world that aspire. First of all, they want to get out of poverty. They want electricity. They want all of these things. And it's natural that I think for the population at large, it's hard to think about sustainability when you're not, even not for us hard. I mean, look around, you know, people in Germany, and like people don't want to give up their SUVs, etc. So.
Yeah.
When you even don't
have
access
to
electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you need to, you can only kind of, we can only achieve the Paris goals if we allow that we can do that while other nations can continue to prosper and continue to develop. So we need to think about these things, two things at the same time. And so solar projects like the one in Mauritania, which is now a part of a of there's a big plant that that has been built there, a big solar plant, and is now part of kind of the university educational system, where now engineers are trained on that plant, so all that knowledge is now kind of being transferred there, right? So allowing them to a path to electrify their country with the knowledge on how to do it in a clean way. So it has many of these kind of additional benefits as well. And these projects, all these kind of carbon offsetting projects, would not be possible without outside financing. So this is kind of one of the categories that you can only offset your emissions by supporting a project that otherwise would not happen, right? So it needs that extra financing. And this is why then, you know, there's a whole apparatus that then calculates of how much CO2 was made possible to reduce by a specific amount of money that that somebody ships in. And that way you can, and that's how offsetting works essentially.
Let us maybe do a little thought experiment, because it's easy for us to talk about, like, in our bubble of caring, so to speak, right? But let's imagine we have someone who's just like, who doesn't really care, but who would like to do something, right? But then the initiative to actually change is quite low. And you probably also noticed that, and you probably also did focus groups, I can imagine. I did it in my own network, so to speak, like having focus groups and just talking to people like, why don't we change? But why should then someone start to use the app and also sort of change themselves and become educated on the topic? Why should they use Klima? What is the incentive for them for using an app to do something good?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I mean, we can start with maybe more, rather than focus groups, more kind of a macro view. There is already millions of people that want to do something. So to put numbers in it, for the US, for example, there's almost 80 million Americans that would be willing to spend enough money on climate change every month that it would take to offset their footprint, right? And yet only a bit less, I think, than 10% have ever used offsetting. And also tell you that, like, there can be many reasons, but I can tell you that one big reason is it's really hard to do that currently. It's not easy. It's complex. It's hard to understand. It's like, it's not explained easily enough, and it's not easy enough to do. And also it's there's a certain lack of visibility and of transparency. So, and this is a big thing that we're trying to solve with Klima. So right now, a lot of people that we talk to have expressed that thought of, like, you know, the current solution, it feels like I'm donating into a black box, and then I don't know if anything happened, you know. I can go to a website, I can book a flight, and then I'm asked to do a little checkbox to offset the flight, but...
And you have no trust, right? Like, it's... Yeah. You don't really trust that Lufthansa is like, doing that.
I wonder if I can trust it, and I wonder what happens. I never hear about it again, so it's almost as if I didn't do it, and also nobody else hears about it. So, you know, if a tree falls in the wood and nobody's there to witness that kind of situation, you ask yourself, like, did that really happen? And so a big thing of what we're, and kind of generally speaking, this is the big problem that we have with global warming in general, because it is, first of all, almost, it has been for the longest time, unperceivably slow in its progression. Now that's changing. And CO2 is invisible, right? I don't see what I put into the air. The air still looks the same to me. And so likewise, if I do something positive, I also don't see or feel or smell what I did, what effect that had. So what we're doing in the app is we have created an impact tracker. And that really, the moment that you sign up, the first thing that you see is a counter, and it tells you, and it counts up every minute, every second. And it tells you how much CO2 you're now avoiding with your contributions every moment of the day, right? And it counts up, and it tells you, okay, this is now my money is now working for me. And we break it down into every individual project, and we tell you, like, you have so many trees you have already planted, so many kilowatt hours of solar energy you have made possible, so many clean meals have been cooked on cook stoves that you provided. Really kind of try to break it down, and every time you come back you realize something has changed, and obviously we try to gamify it, make it kind of very rewarding so that people can also celebrate their milestones, and we celebrate mm-hmm. with them and make it shareable so that you feel like, oh, this is easy, I did this, I want to share this, maybe it will inspire other people as well. So we want to make it very, very, very visible. I think that's a big, big, big difference and a big, big problem that we're trying to solve. And then also, I think when we talk about offsetting, is obviously only one part, and the other part is also behavior change. Mm-hmm. What we need to do in order to decarbonize in the long term, or in the shorter, the better term, our societies, will obviously mean we all need to change our lives. We can't solve we can't stop climate change without completely changing the way we eat, without completely changing the way we commute, the way we, you know, we travel. We need to do so many different things that will at the end affect our lives. And now it's just a question of when is the pressure high enough that we will accept it? Yeah. And how can we speed up that process of acceptance, which will also mm-hmm. create a political situation that makes it easier for politicians to take the actions if the population is already with them on the way, you know? And so what we're trying to do with Klima is really to make a very easy first step, especially for people that haven't done anything but are kind of know that they should, don't really know to get started. You can download the app in 2 minutes, bam, you're carbon neutral. You can already take ownership of that fact, and you can already now go to politicians and say, I'm carbon neutral. What are you doing? When are you getting there, right? And then once you invested in the topic, studies show that people who offset their carbon footprint then also tend to obviously be more conscious about, okay, what contributes to my carbon footprint, right? How can I live more climate consciously? And then the app has like a whole section which also gives you all kinds of lifestyle tips on what you can do to also reduce your footprint, right? And kind of lifestyle changes that you can already do now that I can already tell you eventually we'll all need to do. So it's always better to start on a voluntary note and rather than down the line having to do it under even more pressure and potentially outside pressure to do it. And so, but the question of what can I reduce is a very, very personal question, right? So this is why we are not at all being kind of wagging the finger. And this is something mm-hmm. kind of very fundamentally that we think nobody's in a position to tell somebody else what they should or should not do, or what for them is easy or not easy. Mm-hmm. Take the topic of flying, for example, right? So for me personally, not flying anymore, or, you know, as opposed to like, I did a lot. I have a lot of air miles accumulated throughout my life, right?
Under your belt, okay.
I'm not proud of it, but like for me personally, to stop doing that, that was just a decision to say, listen, I can do Zoom for business most of the time, and I can take I can just change how I think about vacationing, right? And I can start appreciating what's near and what's available by train. And there's so many places that I've not seen that are like in the train ride distance. And why not look at these places? Why not do a bike tour as opposed to, you know, something with a bigger footprint? And I have personally felt that to be an enriching experience, right? So mm-hmm. that's easy for me. It saves me money, it saves me time and all these kind of things. But for somebody else, not flying means I can't visit my family anymore that lives overseas. So it's very different for different people, right? Yes. And this cuts across everything. You know, for me, it's like I don't need to eat meat, you know?
Yes.
I don't miss it much, you know. I do sometimes on occasion when I visit my parents, and my mom has like from the farmer in the same village has like some meat and is prepared with much love and so on. I make an exception, but normally it's not part of my life anymore. It's easy, but I understand for other people it's incredibly hard, right? So it's up to everybody. Like, I think it's individual. What we're trying to do with Klima is to say, like, whatever is easy for you, we want to be here for you to make that even easier, to take that step, right? So we have these kind of guidelines that just make suggestions and say, like, maybe you're more the person that can do without meat already. Maybe it still needs you to take like 2-3 years to ponder it, but you don't need, you know, but you can live without a car. So it's very individual. And if everybody would start already where they can make an easy change for their personal life, then we would already achieve a lot, right? And so the app tries to do that as well.
So it's what you say is, if we look at every individual, there's some small wins that everyone can have, but they look different for everybody individually.
Exactly.
For someone, it's easier to not fly, and then they can save 2 flights a year. And for others, it's easier to just start offsetting and pay donate to the projects that are in the app. And for others, it's like, I don't eat meat. So you try to make it more visible for them.
Yeah, we try to create, let's say, an easy buy-in for everyone to say, like, there's something easier that everybody can start with. Why don't we start there? And then all on the journey, you know?
Yeah.
As far as offsetting goes, unfortunately, there is still there's a certain amount of CO2 that we can't reduce right now. So there's around like 5 or 6 tons per year, just because of the way that our society is designed. So offsetting right now, if we want to go completely carbon neutral, is currently the only thing we can do to get there.
Yeah.
And so I think it will remain a big part of the climate solution that we're looking at individually and at large for the next decades to come.
And I like that approach. I like what you just said, because maybe it's also a good thing for the consumer for the user just to know, okay, I did a big step, but that doesn't mean that we are there yet, right? Because it's maybe then the awareness starts to actually, politicians have to adapt and our policies have to adapt. We need carbon tax more strictly, et cetera, et cetera. So do you know what I mean? So it's like, I did a lot, but I did like 60% of what I could do. And now the 40% or 80-20, if we could say, the 20% that now are hard, now also have to get done. So it's like, you're not selling the dream of easily saving the world, but you're helping so many people to do what they already could do. So I like that.
I think it's touching on something important, which is that nobody's an island. Nobody can save the climate by themselves.
Totally.
So
not even Elon Musk. Yeah.
No, not even Elon Musk now. And so, so we need to, as much as Klima is focusing on individual action, because that's one part of the bigger puzzle.
Yeah.
We need to think about collective action as well. There's no way around it. But it's again not a question of either or. It's a question of both and. And so we can only, if we take individual action, we realize, well, I can't change the way that houses are built and shift from concrete to kind of wooden structures, for example, which would have much better climate footprint. I can't change that. I need governments to change that, regulation, et cetera, or I need like inventors to do that. And at the same time, governments and like everybody that thinks collectively will, if they think holistically, will realize we can't make all these laws if like individuals are not also willing to, you know, bear the consequences and like if individuals are not also doing their part. We can't, you know, we can't have a law that tells everyone to recycle if nobody actually does it. It doesn't work. We can't tell everybody, okay, let's flatten the curve. We now make masks mandatory. If nobody's wearing masks, that's not going to work. And so, and with every crisis and every kind of big challenge that we want to overcome as a society, we need to look at both these levels. It needs to be collective and regulatory, but also we need to all live that change that we want to see. We need to become part of it, and we need to express that in our words and in our actions.
I totally agree. Totally agree to that. Marcus, there are a lot of topics that we could talk about, but I would like to leave it at that point and have our listeners to really ponder about what you talked about and what you mentioned. But where do you want to lead them? What is it where you want our listeners and actually a lot of people to have awareness about? Is there something that they can check out? Are you on socials? Is there anywhere people should go afterwards?
Yes, for sure. You will find everything about what we're doing and including the possibility to sign up to our beta on our website, klima.com. That's klima.com. And you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter under Get Klima.
Great, great. Marcus, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners? Is there something, maybe a personal note, where you say this is something that hasn't been talked about before that you want to share?
I think we got the chance to cover a lot of ground. So thanks for having me on. I don't know when this is going out to the masses, but this Friday there's the global climate strike. I would invite everybody to go there. If you listen to this at a later point, I can only recommend being part in that kind of collective action as well. It feels really empowering to see so many people on the streets fighting for the right thing. And it's something for me personally where, I take a lot of energy from events like that. And I would, again, invite people to check it out and show their faces and their posters in the street and be part of the change politically and also personally.
Thank you so much, Marcus.
Thank you.